Hey, I'm Jason, and
I'm Mike Pfeiffer. Yeah, that was better, right?
Pfeiffer, 00 Pfeiffer. Anyways, this is.
So I always got a comment, man, on my introduction.
Go ahead. You got a comment on your introduction?
You always have a comment.
Well, no, I do, because I just got comments on the fact that I have the wrong phone, apparently.
Oh, man.
Remember, we're all about cross-platform, guys. So it's okay that I have an inappropriate phone. Anyways, so this
I have a Windows phone.
I know you do. And I think the Windows phone's great. That bright yellow one that you carry around is awesome. Are you going to get the pink one, too?
No.
Oh, just man. Checking.
It's getting late in here. It's going to be a cage match in here pretty soon. Now, go ahead.
You know, what's funny is that they might want to see the cage match more than migration. Guys, this is our last section, and this is... There's a lot of stuff here, right? On migrating to Exchange 2013. Here's the... See, it's our last module. If you've made it this far, woohoo! You've made it through the day. If you're coming back later and watching this, I hope this isn't the first one that you've watched because it requires a lot of information that we've gone through the day. But this is all about migrating and the migration process. So... One of the cool parts is I don't have a lot of slides for this. This is one of these Mike Pfeiffer specialty things. So we'll take a look at the overview of the migration process. He'll give us some tips and tricks. We're going to throw in some information, by the way, about the, don't tell anybody, the new public folders. But you're probably most interested at this migration process. So, Mike, start us off with an overview. I got a slide that shows the overview. I want to go from that... my old stuff, to the new stuff. Now, if I've migrated from 2000 to 2010, would you say this is similar?
So, were the versions again?
He's leaving me. He's not even listening anymore. He left me hanging.
Wait, you said 2000 to...
No, I said 2007 to 2010. Is this similar?
Sort of. It's going to be different, right? Because you're doing things a little bit differently. I mean, you're still going to introduce your CAS, and you're going to extend the schema and do things like that. So the process is going to be similar, but you just mentioned public folders. We're doing public folders in a different way, and we're going to talk about that. But that migration piece is a lot different than what we used to do in the past. Moving the mailboxes, yeah, that's similar. Moving the public folders is going to be something you've never seen before.
So if you have experience doing migration, you probably want to make sure that you've brushed up on this before you do 2013 because there are so many differences. One, obviously, is going to be the architecture difference. You have a lot less servers to build now. I mean, since there's two roles, and especially if you're doing DAGs, you can get both the mailbox and CAS on the same role. I've got to ask you, just because everybody wants to know, are you available? No. What everybody wants to know is, you got to tell us the 2003 story. You got to tell us about 2003. Can I migrate from 2003 to Exchange 2013?
It's a great question. Actually, we cannot, right? So you have to actually have 2007 or 2010. So if you're still on 2003, what you would have to do is you would have to start 2010, hop over to 2010, then introduce 2013. And go to that. Now, there is another option. What you could do is you could put in 2010 CAS and move 2003 mailboxes into Exchange Online. You could do that, but you can't move 2003 mailboxes directly to Exchange 2013.
And you brought up the word that, you know, we haven't talked much about Exchange Online. We know that a lot of people are going to Exchange Online. It's an awesome solution from going from on-premises to off-premises and getting up into the cloud. That might be something for another kind of jump start, but you bring up a kind of a nifty note that if you were going from 2003, you could hop into Exchange Online, but if you're doing the 2013 on-premises, you're going to have to hop into 2010 first.
Yeah, and there's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, because you've got to move all that data off of 2003, and you need to gracefully remove 2003, which means all mailboxes, all public folders are moved over.
So, and in my experience using ADSI Edit to clean out 2003.
Yeah, you don't want to get in that situation where you're doing that kind of stuff. But, yeah. You know, it can be difficult in the sequences and how things go. It can be a tough migration. So the answer, though, is you can't install 2013 into a 2003 org. Org that has 2003. We'll actually block you on that.
So if you have it, you're going to have to get fully migrated up.
Yep.
Then you can look at this migration process. So really what we're focused on is the 2007-2010
yep.
migrating to 2013. Now, I've got a slide of the tips and tricks here that you're going to be talking about, and I know there's a lot to talk about with this. So, you know, what kind of planning should we do? You know, the preparing Active Directory, what roles need to get installed first? I'll let you kind of take it away on this. So I have an existing 2010 environment. Where do I start?
Yeah, so it's a good question. It's, can you do it over the weekend? That's the big question. Do you need to coexist or do it? Can you do it over the weekend? It's easy to coexist with 2010, to be honest. I mean, you can.
And coexistence is probably the option that most people are going to want to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it's going to take you a few weeks to get to a full migration.
Or six months.
Yeah, more likely, right?
Yeah.
It's easier with 2010 because we can proxy to 2010 very easily. 2007 is different because, you know, for OWA connections, we need to send you to what's known as a legacy namespace, right? So that's another namespace, legacy.contoso.com, on top of something you already have, mail and autodiscover.com or contoso.com. So that's a consideration if you're going to 2007 or if you have a mix right now of 2007 and 2010 and you need to accommodate both of those coexistence scenario.
As a note for people that are on 2007, they are probably going to have some additional work and a little bit more challenging time than if they were all on 2010 at this point to get migrated up.
Yeah, you've got an extra consideration. If you want to reuse your old mail namespace, we want you to move that to 2013, that primary mail.company.com namespace, and then send the old users to 2007 through a legacy redirect. So now with CU2 in 2013, we make that pretty easy, but you do have to have a certificate probably on the 2007 CAS
right.
that has that name on it. You know, CU2 with 2013 will give you like a seamless SSO type of experience where you get to the 2013 OWA page, you get the blue screen.
You're
like, oh, I'm upgraded, and you type in your username and password, and then you get redirected into a 2007 OWA type of
right,
situation.
Right, you showed us. I mean... Well, yeah. you showed us the admin.
We showed you the 2010 proxy, but a similar kind of idea.
Right.
So you got to, if you're going to do coexistence with 2007, you got to think about that kind of stuff. The good thing is we have a deployment assistant. It's got super good documentation.
Is this a person that will come out and do it for me?
No, but it is something that will tell you from a high level how to attack this.
Okay.
Right?
So we have a deployment assistant that will help us out with this.
Right. So let's just jump into that because it's got a lot of pointers and a lot of good information. If you just go into Bing, Exchange Server 2013 Deployment Assistant, you can see it's already suggesting
yes.
that for me. So we want the 2013 one, right? But if you go to this first link in TechNet, this may take you to the 2010. So this one, what you're looking for, the keyword here is
2013.
The 2013. So I'm going to pick this one. And you can find this, but essentially it's going to come here and talk about what the Deployment Assistant is. It actually will set you up in terms of, are you doing an on-premises migration? What versions do you have? What do you need to think about? Are you actually going to do some hybrid with the cloud? Maybe not move everything into Exchange Online, but maybe just set up kind of a hybrid. You know, put some archives out there.
Put some archives.
Keep stuff
on-premises.
You know, so it's got all these scenarios. It asks you questions about your environment. You fill out the answers, then it gives you kind of a high-level steps of what to do. Now, every environment is different. It's not going to give you step-by-step exact steps of what you need to migrate, but it's going to get you pretty close. It's the best thing than you know, trying to piece all the documentation together by yourself. This will send you down the right road. Okay, so let's just click on this link here that takes us out to the tool. And here's that first questions is, are you doing on-premises only? Are you going to do hybrid, which is a mix of on-premises and cloud? Or are you just going cloud only? That's pretty simple because you just put it in the cloud. But this is a little bit more involved. So let's hit on-premises. So we want to deploy 2013 into our on-premises. We'll pick that. And now we're asking, where are you at right now? Are you in a mix? Are you just 2010? Are you doing a brand new install, which is going to be very simple.
The easiest,
yeah.
Right, because we've already done that today. We
right.
could be done with that one.
Right.
But, so like upgrading from 2010, right?
Yeah.
Or if you have a mixed environment.
Let's do mix in case some folks out there do have 2007. It'll talk about that kind of stuff. So we'll hit this next. Then it's asking, are you going to do multi-role? We've been talking about this all day. Are we going to couple the CAS and mailbox role on the same machine, or are you going to split them out? So that's pretty much what we're asking here. So do you want to install the same server or different servers, or install the roles same or different? So we'll say same server, because we've been doing that all day,
all
right?
All day, right. Yeah, multi-role.
Are you running a disjoint namespace?
What does that mean?
And this actually will take you into this. This is kind of a... not a, it's a less common type of scenario, but the best thing is to go out into the documentation when you hit this and actually read through it. It talks about, you know, disjoint namespace, primary DNS suffix, and DNS domain name are different, right? Where you've got kind of some things where the names are not exactly the same on every server. Domain controllers might have a different UPN
different.
Suffix.
Than, okay, I'm with you.
You know, member server computer is disjoint, something like that, where it's just that one box. Net BIOS name of the domain controller different. We just mentioned
from
that
the,
one.
Yeah.
So, you know, different things like that. So you can come in here and see, are you actually in that situation?
Well, this is fairly detailed because that's kind of a more rare situation.
It is. Yeah, I mean, medium, smaller environments usually, you know, you don't see a whole lot of it, but, you know, you just fill it out if you do. We'll go with no for now. But, you know, obviously go through that and make sure you've answered it correctly. Then you come into, do you have Edge?
Oh, yeah, do you have Edge? Now, and the like very, you said, yeah. Just as a quick review, you said 2013, we don't have an Edge role, but you support the older Edge role.
Yeah, and you get the latest updates for those guys, and it's going to be in this checklist. You're going to get a really nice checklist out of this. And if I remember correctly, there's no actual logo on there. So you might be able to pass this off as your own checklist. I don't know. I'll have to see what happens. I'm just saying. Just throwing an idea out there, guys.
Ooh, just throwing it out there.
But I'm going to keep it simple. Just say no.
Yeah, and a lot
you know,
of people
we're gonna have,
their own you know, on-premises
exactly.
kind of appliance for this. So
it kind of starts off and says, you know, what is this thing all about? Can I see the answers? How do I change the answers that I just went through? You know, you can restart this thing over if you want and type in different stuff. And this is just like all help information. But really what you want to do is on the left is dive into this stuff, like deep dive type of, you know, come in here, verify prereqs. A lot of this stuff we did earlier today.
All the prereq stuff. And this is where you go in and make sure that.
Let me check this. Did I click on this earlier? Yeah, sorry. Before you begin, I thought I clicked on it and nothing happened. But this is the stuff that we were looking at this morning, like schema updates. But let's look at server roles. It talks about the architecture we talked about this morning, CAS and mailbox. It gives you a refresher. So if you watch the video and
which is, I think,
missed a few things that we said.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll tell you the stuff that we already talked about. It'll tell you that, hey, you might need to get the AD guys to help
which
you
we
extend
did this
the
morning,
schema.
Right?
Yeah, and then it takes you out to the learn more at the links where it shows you the commands if you need to have those guys run that stuff individually, which is really cool. And it's got all kinds of background information.
So it kind of reviews the server roles. It reminds us to make sure that we do the AD prep and that we extend the schema.
Yep.
And now, certificates?
Yeah, certificates. So we saw how easy that was, right? A couple wizards, a couple next, and then, man, you just got
certificates
everywhere.
Yeah, I love the way the wizards have done it. It seems kind of like a strange time to bring up certificates, but why are we talking about certificates right now?
Well, you want to think about it early. I mean, you mentioned earlier third-party certificates. You're going to have to spend some money. You're going to have to plan out your namespaces, maybe.
It takes some time to get them.
You know, if you're in 2010 right now, you might be able to reuse that certificate that's there. You might already have mail.contoso.com and AutoDiscover on a certificate. You just export it from 2010 and import it on 2013.
Right.
That might be easy to do. But if you're in a mix where you've got 2007, you need legacy namespace, that means you need to have that cert on 2007. So you might end up needing to build a new certificate. But this really just is taking you through the stuff we talked about earlier today is what's the difference between an internal Active Directory certificate authority versus a third-party provider that I buy a certificate from, and every device pretty much trusts that certificate.
Trust that, yeah.
So it's really just a background and letting you know, hey, you're going to need to think about this, and here's why, and here's the details. And then there's going to be another step where it says, hey, you need to actually do this now type of thing. But then it goes into the legacy host name for 2007.
Okay, and this is what you were talking about, because you selected the option if you had both 2007
right.
and 2010, and this is what you were talking about if you've got 2007,
yeah.
what you're going to have
so
to do.
So a 2003 will proxy to 2010 just fine. So I get the blue login screen, and I see the yellow OWA if I'm on 2010.
Right.
But if I'm on 2007, that's a redirect. We need to send you over to legacy, or you can pick a name, whatever you want. It just needs to be a URL, right, that we can redirect you to.
That we can send you to.
Yeah, and you just put the URL on the external URL value on the 2007 CAS, and that's how we determine to redirect you over there. And that's all there is to it.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's really only if you need coexistence for a period of time. Like I said, if you can do all this in a weekend, if you're fast.
Right, because you don't need the redirects because nobody's going to know.
But, I mean, that's going to be unlikely.
It's going to be really hard to get, you know, so for a lot of folks, just getting the data moved is going to take longer than.
Exactly, yeah. And then it talks about split DNS. You know, this is a lot of background information. It's all before you begin stuff. Like, why do I care about split DNS? And talks
about. Which we talked about this morning.
We talked about it. And, I mean, you know now that it's It's going to make things easier for you.
It's funny how we showed everybody like this stuff. I know. You know, it's funny how it was almost like planned out that we...
You would have thought that maybe we actually planned this, but you know.
Yeah, you would have thought.
So here's the other thing. This is huge. This
supported
is massive.
Clients. Ooh.
And this is where I've worked with customers, and they've started their deployment and done a really great job on the server side. But since the desktop guys are the ones that do the desktop updates, none of the clients can connect once the mailbox is removed.
So what clients do we need to make sure that we have? Because that is going to be very embarrassing to go, we've migrated, and everybody goes, but we can't connect to it.
Yeah. Being able to connect is kind of a key to your migration success, right?
Yeah.
So first thing is, you know, we're big on AutoDiscover now, more than ever. We have been, but now we've really relied on it even more than ever. And, you know, we want to make sure that all the clients support AutoDiscover. So Outlook 2003 is out of there.
Out.
So if you look at this list here, we've got Outlook 2010, 2007. You've got some stuff out there for the stuff that you like to use, the Mac
Outlook
the Mac
for
stuff.
Mac 2011, yeah. Yes. I happen to use Outlook for Mac 2011. I'm glad
you know,
that we are still
pretty
supported.
Pretty much anything that uses Exchange Web Services from a third-party perspective.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, if you look at the fine details here, a lot of people will just install Office with a service pack. But look,
you
November
need
2012
update.
At a bare minimum. And that's for 2010 and 2007. And actually, right now, there's updates that are newer than this that I would recommend you get. There's August, there's an August update for these guys as well.
So a great example is if you're using System Center, let's say Configuration Manager, you probably, in your planning phase, you want to make sure the clients are ready to go before you start this migration stuff.
Yeah.
Get everything patched out up to an appropriate level. That obviously, you've tested already.
Right.
That kind of thing. And so you can send all that stuff out, and then your clients are good to go.
Exactly. So that's key. And you know, like I said, most of the customers that I've worked with have gotten hit by this. So it's going to take some effort to updating those clients. Obviously, you can get them into OWA, but you know, if you're moving somebody over, they're going to be expecting to open Outlook, and it just works.
Yeah.
Right?
So OWA, though, is a great failover if something does go wrong.
Right.
You know, that was unplanned. But what we're trying to do is get rid of the unplanned work and actually plan the
right.
solution. So
get the latest updates, because these ones will actually give you support to connect to Exchange 2013. Because we do have different authentication types, like RPC authentication types that were added in Outlook 2013. So that natively supports that. But in order for these other versions to get that update, you got to have this November 2012. And then the update that's out there now from August actually fixes an issue where we're reversing the Outlook Anywhere URLs. So you need to get the latest.
Just as a side note, you need the latest one, the August one or whatever. Okay.
If you're not using split DNS, yeah.
Okay.
So this would work in a split DNS configuration, get you up and going, right? So that's a lot of stuff already, and we're just on the before you begin, right? But it's kind of a review from earlier, right?
No, but this is great. This is a review of everything that we've kind of been going through today. And yes, I love how you pointed out this. We're just on the before you begin.
Yeah, right.
These are all good things. You got to have the clients, got to have your schema updated, which may have required AD guys. So awesome.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of little things to go through here. So I'm not going to drag you through every bullet point, but, you know, prerequisites
please,
were easy.
Please drag us through every single bullet point.
Oh, we'll go through the important stuff. I know these guys are screaming in the back.
Screaming, no, Mr. Bell, no.
We talk about in here the minimum exchange versions. We flew by this earlier today. When you've got 2010 in the environment, you need Service Pack 3 on that, on those guys. Yeah. Update them all. All right. Same thing with 2007. You're going to need SP3 RU10 or higher. So you got to get your servers upgraded. All right. And that might take some work as well to get that done.
Now, permissions.
Okay? Yeah. We talked about RBAC. So, you know, basically, if you're 2010 now, you're going to be in the organization management role group, and you're ready to go.
Okay.
Right.
So as an admin in the organization management, I'm pretty much set.
Yeah, we review in here like what you need and all that, down to the Windows level and also Exchange perspective. It's really stuff we've already reviewed.
Okay, right? Awesome.
Here's some information that might help you out on what you need to collect in terms of your current namespaces and stuff like that, so you can reuse those.
As we were doing the CAS today, the namespace planning, getting the namespaces set up.
Yep. So this is pretty basic. Let's move on to the default offline address book. And I'm glad that this is actually called out in the deployment assistant, because this can actually hit you negatively if you introduce 2013 into an existing environment where you don't have a default OAB configured on your databases. And this is what this is talking about here. So in Exchange 2010, if you didn't associate a default OAB on the properties of the mailbox database,
right,
when we install 2013, we set a new default OAB. And if you're in a mailbox database where you don't have a default OAB, you're going to get the new one from 2013.
So wait a minute. So what you're saying is that I haven't been migrated yet. I'm still on 2010.
Yeah.
And I'm suddenly going to get the offline address book.
The new one.
From 2013.
If you introduce 2013 and those are still not set on the legacy servers, now you're doing a new OAB download.
So to prevent this, what is it that I need to do?
You go through and you set an OAB on the existing.
So you set on each of those databases.
And here's the cool thing about a lot of these steps. How do I do this?
Oh, yeah, I like that. Oh,
so
yeah,
come down here and figure out. But this is really cool because it's like, I have no idea how to start this. And this actually takes you through. It gives you the background, shows you how to go through and set it up. All right.
So we got.
So this gives you the background that we just kind of talked about.
Yeah.
You know, it says why you want to do this, and that's, you know, in an environment where you have a large OAB. If you only have 50 users, it's probably not going to be a big deal.
Right.
But if you've got as many as we do at Microsoft, and your OAB is like really, really big, 600 megabytes or whatever it is,
that could be an effect. Yeah.
It might be tanking the internet connection at the house. Yeah. So, just watch out for that. And let's just jump into. Installing Exchange. This was simple, right? We talked about downloading the latest CU, get CU2, extract it. We're talking again about the minimum versions, all that
doing
stuff.
Doing the prereqs, getting it all installed,
yep.
Which is what we did this morning.
Okay. All that good stuff. That's all in here. So you're basically going to, oh, and here's that little thingy.
Oh, oh, that's perfect. It's actually was thought through. Yeah.
Right.
That switch, so because when you had signed into the EAC, you had first gotten thrown back because your mailbox was on the 2010,
yep.
And you had to put in that added piece, and right there
right.
It is.
Yeah, because my mailbox hadn't been moved yet, right? So, you know, we go through, we did the external URLs and the internal URLs. We did certificates. It's like, how do I do this? How
this
do I reuse?
Takes you through it all again.
We talked about maybe reusing the 2010 one. Maybe you can export it, import it on the new servers. This will, if you expand these out, it gives you background and tasks to do.
Yeah, you know, this seems so thorough. Why do we need you again?
You really don't. I'm really golfing a lot lately and doing other things like that. So
and now,
pretty much you call me when you like get halfway through and something's not working.
Oh, okay. I see. So that's, well, I see this next one here that we were talking about earlier, this arbitration mailbox. This came up when we were doing the auditing, right?
Yeah. And this is also used for some other things as well. But it goes into the background here, but it gives you the actual system mailbox name. We mentioned this during RBAC, you're right. And then, you know, basically, it's just giving you a heads up saying that, hey, this stuff isn't going to work
unless you
move this mailbox.
So
and it
now,
tells you exactly what to do.
So now we're kind of in process. So we're going to move this mailbox now that we've got 2013 installed.
Right. And notice down here it says, hey, once you move this thing over to 2013, now from the 2013 tools, you can run the search admin audit log. You can do some exports from the EAC. You can create a discovery search. Otherwise, without that, you'd have been in a little bit of a bind. And it's laid out here well, but if you're looking through TechNet just browsing, the sequence is going to be tough.
This
is what's key here is it's taking you through in the
right
order.
No, I love this. This is a great helpful tool for it. So now we're enabling and configuring what, Outlook?
Yeah, Outlook Anywhere. So we did our mail.contoso.com. And this is just giving you some PowerShell commands to set the internal and external URLs on this. And one thing that that I will mention is, let me hop over real quick to the server, because it'll make a little more sense if I show this. So if we go into a server, when you do an install by default, this thing is going to be set, the authentication, the external authentication is going to be set to negotiate. And the negotiate doesn't work on legacy servers. So if I set up Outlook Anywhere for external access and I've got negotiate, that's fine if everything was just 2013, but if I'm connected to a secondary mailbox on 2010 or something like that, then that's not going to work. So this thing will actually tell you if you change this. Exchange versions earlier than 2013 do not support the negotiate client authentication.
Okay.
Connectivity to public folders and mailboxes may be affected. So when I enabled Outlook Anywhere, I set the names up, but I also set my external authentication to basic. Right?
So that it would work with.
So that, if I connected with Outlook Anywhere from the outside and I had my secondary mailboxes or I hadn't finished my public folders yet, then it would work and I wouldn't get any pop-ups.
So the rule is that for this migration, I mean, which did you say it came up with as default when you installed 2013? Negotiate. So you got to go out there and change this.
Yeah. And it'll tell you, like, if you set the URLs, because it's going to be internal, the internal name by default, you come in and set the external name and you hit save and you don't change the authentication, it'll let you know. It'll show you the same pop-up.
Oh, the same thing? Okay.
And it'll tell
great.
You, hey, man, you got to do this or else you might have that issue.
Well, now that we know to look for what it means,
that's
that's
always important to read the errors. Or not the errors, but even just the pop-ups, right? It's like, hey, should read this. Sometimes I just click through stuff, and it's like, eh, it's gone.
Yeah, we should actually read what pops up.
Because it actually,
bing it if you don't know what's,
yeah, right.
You know.
Because it actually told you exactly the whole story behind that. So anyway, enabling it's fairly straightforward. You remember the service connection point?
Oh, wait a minute. What was the service connection point? That was something
for
with the CAS,
that
right?
Was the auto-discover service internal that URI that
the
was...
The internal one, yeah.
It's not in the GUI. So this thing reminds you about it. You go in and you set it through.
This was the extra step that you came up and did. And this is the one that you also had
I did it a little bit differently, but it still has PowerShell in here on how to do that.
Yeah.
So if you watch the video and kind of watch the and go through the deployment assistant, it should kind of give you some perspective on what you're actually doing.
And then this is the time when you went out, because we didn't want to wait for it. You went out and just recycled the app pulls, right?
Yeah. And if you wait long enough, eventually.
It'll do it.
But if you do in one of those test email auto configurations in Outlook and see the auto discover response, you're seeing the old URLs. It's probably that cache.
It's probably that. Okay.
Creating DNS records inside and out. That's, you know.
This is actually an important piece because a lot of admins, you know, that don't deal with DNS every single day can get confused by where do my MX records need to be, all of that kind of stuff. So I like this DNS section.
Yeah. So it'll just give you the reminders and, you know, again, you're doing split DNS, so you have two DNS changes to make.
Right.
Inside and out. Now, here's the big part, moving the mailboxes.
Ooh. And by the way, this is one of those things that you're supposed to demo, I hope.
Yeah, well, we will. But yeah, it's all documented in here. The coolest thing about this is the migration batch functionality. Because it actually will email you at the end of the mailbox move. And I used to write all these crazy scripts to like, hey, let's check the status of these moves and let's fire off all these emails to let you know what's going on. But now it just finishes the batch and then sends you.
Okay, you got to show us this because I really like the concept of
saying,
go move these and I'm going to, well, as you would say, go out and play golf. Let me know when it's done.
Let's do it. Yeah, exactly.
I like that. So, yeah, let's move some mailboxes.
So if you come over to recipients, now you can do this for one at a time, right? You can come down here and then move to another database. That will start the migration batch wizard. Or you can come over here. And you can feed it a CSV, you can multi-select users, but let's just come through here. Notice it's also the way that we can do cross-forest moves here.
Oh,
this
awesome.
Is the way that we do cross-forest moves to Office 365. That's technically a cross-forest move. But we're just gonna move our users from a legacy version of Exchange over to 2013. So notice you might have a pre-populated CSV file, you can just browse to it and it'll read that recipient list.
Oh, it takes the CSVs, yeah. I like that.
Or you can just say, hey, because you might be tracking that in a spreadsheet. Hey, I've done like 50 users. Let me delete the ones that are done. But you know, I might just pick a couple. And my VMs are really slow, so this would be kind of slow. But I'm just going to pick two to keep it simple. These guys are on a 2010 database. So say OK to that. Hit next. OK, and then we'll just give it a name. So
here's your
move batch one. How about that? The first move batch. Hey, come on, man. You came up with one earlier. Yours was Bob's DLP policy or something like that.
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
I know.
Give me a hard time.
Move batch one. Nice. Okay.
Hey, it's a good name. All right. If you actually read this, it tells you that you can do the archive along with the primary mailbox move.
Okay, so if you had a 2010 and you were using the archive mailboxes, this is going to bring it all?
Yeah. Somebody, I think, asked this, and I hadn't had a chance to answer yet, but if you don't define a target database, we're going to randomly select a 2013 database for you. You can control it here, but we're going to randomly pick. It's just a random, there's no rhyme or reason. There's no, hey, what's the smallest database? There's less mailboxes. We just pick one. But you can come in here and say, hey, I want to be explicit about that. I want it all to go to this guy. And then you could do the same thing if you had archives. You could send the archives to a different database.
To a very specific
database. You might have it on a different set of storage.
A slower set
slower
of storage,
yeah,
rather than your high-speed storage.
So now we've defined the criteria for our move. And then few options. Who do you want to email the report to when it's done? It's going to default to me because I'm running the wizard.
So you'll get the email.
I'll get
so
the
I won't
email.
Be bothered by it then.
Right.
Okay. That's, I just want to make sure you get it.
Yeah, because I know that you didn't actually respond to it.
Yeah.
The way things have been going lately with you and your email. Anyway, you can start the batch automatically or start it later by doing it in the dashboard. So essentially, this is something you could schedule this. Again, this is all about that getting out to the golf course. Schedule
right.
it. Have it maybe not complete automatically. So let it do the work for you and kick off whenever you want. When you come back, you can complete the migration batch.
Now, what does that mean? Help us understand what that means. Because you just removed a box that says automatically complete the migration batch. What's going on here?
That gives me the ability to move the majority of the data and then come in later once it's all done and hit basically a complete option and finalize the move, do an incremental resync, and then flip the switch and send you over to 2013. So I can move most of your mailbox or all of it potentially.
So let me ask
before actually sending you to 2013.
Okay, this is kind of cool because what you're saying is you're going to sit there and do all that long process stuff of moving the mail, but the user is still using and getting mail and sending.
Never going to get prompted to restart Outlook.
They're never going to get prompted to restart Outlook or any of that. So the bulk of the move is done.
Yep.
They're still sending and receiving on their old mailbox. And you're going to come in and say complete. What we're going to do is just kind of catch it up real quick.
Yeah.
And then
do a last
sync,
and then we'll complete the move. Now they're moved.
Now, see, that's actually a great process because this is something you can have run during the night when I'm not in the office. And then in the morning when we have help desk staff in case something goes wrong, something
right.
like that, kick off the complete and
exactly.
voila.
That's really cool. So, and the report is really awesome. You click on new, it creates that batch. And then we'll see the status in here. But that's just one way to do it. If you did moves with the, and notice it gives you a little alert here. Hey, this is queued up and it just started that time. This is kind of nice. You get some alerts in here. This thing also will give you alerts when you're 30 days out of an expiring certificate, which is pretty cool.
Okay, that's really cool.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, certificate guys, that's one of the biggest challenges they have is when's the cert going to expire?
Yeah, but you know, if you did 2010 mailbox moves, you know, you migrated to something else over to 2010, you use new move requests the move request functionality. This is still like a request-based move. It's still an MRS-based move. And you can use those old commandlets like new move requests and all that stuff. You can still use that if you want. The batch is nice because it just gives you more reporting and things like that. So you can monitor status here and finalize it later and all that good
stuff. Yeah, I like the finalizing it later so when it's had a chance to move.
We'll come back to this because the slow lab, it's going to take a little bit of time. But let's jump into the public folders part of the
thing. All right. I got a slide, notes on public. If you guys want to share the slide, notes on public folders.
Yeah, put some notes up there.
And so, and we're going to talk about
You've actually done this, right? You've done a...
I've done the new public folders. And first of all, you're going to have to explain. You see, public folders, I mean, this architecture for public folders doesn't feel like it's changed in ever since, you know, 2003 or whatever. It hasn't changed. All of a sudden in 2013, it's completely different now. It's almost like public folders are cool again. Now before everybody starts throwing spitballs at the screen, I hate public folders because they're out of hand and they're out of control. That's a management issue, right? If you didn't manage security, you didn't manage permissions and they got out of control, then you have to go back and take control of them. But a lot of people still like to use, they don't have necessarily SharePoint. I know they should, but they may not be using everything for SharePoint. A lot of people still like shared calendars and like the functionality of public folders, but it seemed like it was hard to make it, you couldn't really make it highly available in previous versions.
Yeah, you had replicas.
You just had the replicas. Like, it was the older technology and stuff. So what's going on with this new public folder thing?
Yeah, well, just like you said, you had to do replicas for highly available data in public folders. And then you also had, in 2010, one of the things that was kind of a one-off is your clients would connect to a CAS array for mailbox data, but then they would also split off and go directly to the mailbox server for public folder connections. So you had like this split-off connections, and then the public folder database wasn't resilient. Didn't use database replication. There's no continuous replication for public folder databases, so if a disk failed with a public folder database on it, it was like, oh, hopefully you had some replicas.
Right.
Type of thing. So the whole idea is let's not reverse engineer public folder databases. Let's just move the public folders into the already continuous replication model we have in mailbox databases. Put the data in there instead.
And this, I think, is a key concept that I was challenged by at first, is just what you said. Instead of trying to rewrite, basically, the public folder database structure and trying to make that better. Basically, it's let's take the data out of this older, type of structure, and let's put it into something that we already know works that we can use in a DAG. We're just going to put it into a regular database, and we can put it in a DAG.
Yeah, because we already do. We're already good at database replication for mailbox databases. So we got that nailed. We went through the DAG. We added copies. It was easy. So, you know, there are some things that you, the one thing you lose is that multi-master replication type of scenario with replicas. I got a replica in LA and a replica in New York, and we can write to it in two spots. Now that, you know, you get the active database now where your public folder is, but that's all about management, like you said.
It's about management. Think about it. You know, public folders having multiple masters in different locations made a lot of sense when you had 56K.
Exactly.
Between here and New York or whatever.
Yep.
But now we've got better communications. And let's face it, the SharePoint architecture is centralized too.
Exactly.
We've been dealing with it anyway. So this isn't a big hiccup. It's actually a huge improvement because of the fact that we can put it into a DAG now.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you just, you know, once you get over and get this last migration from your legacy public folders into the new modern public folders, you're good to go after this. You know,
now,
there's some management stuff that you need to learn. It's going to be new, but it's going to be easy to move that data around. It's easy to move it into the cloud if you want to do that. I mean, now you have options.
Now you have options. Now, can you do us a favor? Before we talk about the migration, though, of the public folders, can you just show us how to make one of these new public folder databases? And
yeah, let's hop over here real quick back into the deployment assistant, and then we'll just see that it'll actually show us some steps in here.
Oh, cool.
This actually will take you through that piece. So
nice.
You've moved your mailboxes, you do post configuration tasks, now you go into public folders.
Almost like we planned.
Almost like you planned it out.
Yeah.
Now, this will also say, all right, here's some background information, here's the link to go read about all of this. So really what you would wanna do is check this out, because you can create like a new mailbox and say like new mailbox public folder, right? And then you could start putting folders in there and all that. But you gotta like move all of your previous data first and like activate this new modern public folders. We have a bunch of stuff out on TechNet. You gotta download scripts. There's a lot of thought that needs to go into this. It's not terribly difficult, but there are like 8 steps. So if I clicked on this, it'll actually take us out there and we can take a look at it. Notice that it's talking about the scripts. So we have some scripts you need to download, and then we have and what do you need to know? And here's actually, how do I do this?
Okay,
and this
so
is the
download
interesting
the
stuff.
Scripts.
Right.
Step 2, prepare the migration, generate the CSVs.
So let's talk about
what's really happening here.
Yeah, so download the migration scripts. This is going to give you the ability, really steps 1, 2, and 3 is really about finding the public folders that you have out there right now, figuring out how big they are, and then mapping those into what you're going to create as public folder mailboxes in 2013.
Now let's talk about that for a second. So let's say that I've been running on an environment for a long time, and I've got public folders that the size of the public folder database is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's a terabyte.
Right.
Are we just going to want to throw that into one mailbox?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's really what this is about, is carving all that up.
And I think that's what the challenge is with a lot of people understanding is that we're not going to want to throw that all into one mailbox.
Yeah, you don't want just one public folder mailbox. The idea is to carve it up.
We're
going to
need to break this and carve this up, and that's what this is trying to help us with.
Yeah, and we want to accommodate your max mailbox size that you have now. Like if you've decided on 10 gig max mailbox, you adopt that for your public folder mailboxes as well. Maybe you don't. You can crank them up higher, right, if you wanted to. But the idea is to figure out how big the folders are that we have and distribute them across a number of public folder mailboxes.
Okay. Oh, see,
and then,
I like
and then,
this.
And if you have the location type of scenario, you can make those mailboxes closer to users in LA and the other ones closer to the users in New York. And you can do that if you have latency and slow bandwidth.
And you understand your data in the public folders.
Yeah.
You have to understand.
You have to understand how it's laid out. Steps 1 through 3 help you build CSV files to map all of that folder, public folders.
Okay.
Or public folder mailboxes, I should say. And really step 4 is, hey, let's go out and create those. So you just ask that question would be, how would I create a public folder mailbox? Well, you'd basically run new mailbox, public folder, give it a name, hold for migration true. In this scenario, basically what we're saying is we're not going to finalize the migration yet. We're going to start creating stuff. We're going to run through this script to kind of populate all of the remaining folders where they map to in public folder mailboxes.
Okay.
And then we'll kick off some request-based commandlets to do the actual data move, kind of like we would for a mailbox move.
So this is in a similar concept. We want to take it because we know it's going to take time, but and we don't want to turn it off from users to be able to access public folders while we do this. So this will give us a chance to get the data in the different areas that we're going to push it, get it, start moving it over, and then I assume there's going to be a way to complete this towards the end.
Right. Yeah, and that's another big thing that can sometimes be a little bit of a surprise is that you can't like have them split across two versions. Like 2013 and 2010 and having people kind of going to different places for public folder, it's either one or the other. So,
okay,
so you're going to do all this planning, and you're going to move the data, kind of like we talked about earlier, and then you're going to have that period where there's a cutover, and you're gonna say, all right.
Okay, so there is going to be a cutover period for this.
And that's, you know, pretty much what we're doing here. Step four is to create the mailboxes. We're gonna start our migration requests. Step six is to do a lockdown and basically say, hey, no changes on the legacy side.
No changes, okay.
We're gonna finalize the migration and basically say, hey, we're doing a cut. And then essentially there's a series of commands that you need to run through. And again, this might be a good topic for a half day jumpstart or something. Like, there's a lot going on here, right? But, you know, there's a lot going on, but it's definitely doable. This is something I would definitely recommend doing in the lab. We talked about building labs
and
testing stuff in labs earlier today. This is one of those things where you don't want to do this in production as a test. Definitely get a lab environment built up and test this out because there's a lot of steps here and there's a lot of margin for error. We've helped a lot with some of these scripts. You might have to massage some of this and read through this documentation. I know that one of my fellow PFEs, he's a principal PFE, John Rodriguez, just did an entire presentation on this last week in Vegas at Exchange Connections, where he talked for, I think, 75 minutes just on how do I approach this?
How do I even approach?
How do I run some of these scripts and stuff like that? But it's an involved process.
But it's an involved process that gives you a huge payout, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're still on public folders, this is a huge payout. To be able to do this and get it migrated. Now, you do a couple things. You got to show me that your mailbox move worked, and you've got to show me the rest of the migration assistant.
Yeah.
Because you know once we get mailboxes moved, once we get the public folders moved, you know it's that what's next thing.
Right.
Before though he goes into that, I just want to remind everybody that there's a poll I think going to be flashed up here. That we please answer. It's about whether you found this valuable or not, and basically Pfeiffer's going to give $1 to everybody that says yes. No, he's not. Don't hunt him down because then he'll hunt me down. But please, please, please
get him. And, he's got all the money.
Yeah, right. Please answer the poll. Now, can you prove that your mailbox move worked?
Well, check it out. Remember, we said we're going to manually complete it.
Yeah.
So
oh, that's right.
It's synced.
That's right.
We've got two synced. And now we just got to finalize it. We got to complete the batch. So hit complete. Are you sure? Yep. And there we go. So it'll go from completing to completed, and then we're good to go there.
And so really the process, especially with this batch, just migrating them in batch, makes it really nice. Getting the email, being able to complete it at the end. I mean, it's a really nice, slick process.
Yeah, and it's an option. You know, you can just have it finish on its own. So you'll still get the report information. That's a really easy way to create a group of mailbox moves. You know, you can do bulk moves, do a certain amount at a time, you know, do one group, do one department, do the next one. Take that approach with it. You know, there's things to consider when it comes to mailbox moves. You know, you're going to potentially have some performance and you're going to chew up some log space. So that's all stuff you think about where, you know, you do your planning and kind of look at those numbers. But, on the surface, doing a basic move is very easy to do, right? So
let's
look at the
what's left over.
Yeah, if we look at the migration assistant one more time,
which I'm loving this migration assistant because it's really taken us. It's a great reminder of everything that we've done today, and it's also taken us through this process.
Just wanted to touch on a few other things.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got unified messaging and you're moving over, there's quite a bit of stuff that you need to do. It's not hard, but you do need to run through the steps that are listed in here. So you might be in that situation. It's very well documented. You know, the high availability stuff, that's stuff we already talked about.
Right.
Removing legacy versions once you've completely moved everything. It's just some high-level guidance on that and then some other information. I do want to show one last thing in terms of really good information that's out there for you guys to stay up to date with. Go out to Bing, do a search for Exchange 2013. Let's see, not the prerequisites, but the release notes. This is actually really well documented. There's, and it's, you know, it's been updated fairly recently, but we'll keep updating it. But it tells you things like we talked about earlier today. Hey, when you move a mailbox from a previous version, it might increase by 30 or 40%.
And this is...
That's something you want to know about before you start the migration.
And this is because... Is this because of the single instance storage stuff is now gone?
It's just because we calculate the size better in 2013.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And it's not really on disk. It's just that we weren't reporting it at the size that it really was
as accurately
versions.
As it could have
now
been.
It's more accurate. Okay. And in the end result is we're reporting a 30 to 40% higher. So you need to take that into account before you move your mailboxes.
So checking the release notes about that is...
Yeah, it's in the release notes, the stuff about the Outlook client and the OAB. Some of it's a repeat, some other stuff about public folders. But this is another good thing to read through as you go and plan your migration. Between that and your checklist complete here, then you're in good shape. Also, another thing to point out just to say, remote connectivity analyzer rocks. So as you're testing stuff, connect, you know, test your connections from the outside and make sure all that works. But it's just that easy, Jason, to go through and move it all over to 2013.
I like how you say it's just that easy, Jason. But I mean, you know, it's so well documented. I love the migration assistant to make sure that we're not missing any steps. Everything that we've done today, you know, we've done just to set up Exchange 2013. But oddly enough, that's what you're doing if you need to do a migration is set up Exchange 2013 and then start moving mailboxes. The new public folders will throw everybody a little bit, but it's clearly documented.
Give it a shot in the lab first, and then you'll get to feel what it's really looks like. So,
well, you know what's kind of funny, Mike? I think we're kind of down to the end.
Is this it?
I think we're kind of down.
Now we get to do the next thing, right?
What next thing?
We get to really do this in production this weekend, right? We're working this weekend, you and me?
Are we working this weekend? All right, so we're going to do the migration then?
That's right.
All right. I think we can do that. So, guys, it's kind of, I'm up for it. So, you know, migrating is something that you can never take lightly, and we all know that. So you're going to want to test this. But the migration process, while it has similarities, you can see that there's, you know, there's architecture changes in Exchange 2013. There's been huge changes in public folders that are different from what you've experienced before if you've done prior migration. So you're going to want to take some time. I love this migration assistant to make sure that everything is done. You will have noticed if you go back through these previous modules, everything that you need to do through the migration assistance you saw today.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff we touched on. So rewatch the videos, run through this again. Again, it's not going to be exactly specific to your environment, but it's a perfect place to start from a high level.
And, you know, this jumpstart is to get you started with Exchange 2013, to get you seeing what capabilities it has. Just keep a couple of things in mind. There's a lot, you know, Exchange 2013 is a big product. So there were some things that we just didn't have time to talk about today. You know, there's some management things, there's some features and stuff like that. But we wanted to give you...
This is something you usually teach in 5 days, right?
Yeah, this is usually taught as a five-day class. That's the Microsoft 2341 class.
Yep.
5 days of all of this. However, though, this is a great way for you to be able to see how Exchange gets installed, how we went through a lot of planning notes, getting it set up, and all the way up through making a migration for it. So this was pretty cool. I mean,
I enjoyed it. I can't wait till the next one.
I just love that. Well, I enjoyed it. Gee whiz, man. Lots of.
I did.
I know. That's a good. Well, I have to say, Mr. Pfeiffer, thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
I'd like to thank everybody at the production staff here at Microsoft Virtual Academy, all of the people that helped make this come off, everybody that helped us plan this and get this all set up. This took a lot of work from their side, and it was pretty straightforward from your and I side.
That's
so
right.
I want to thank everybody, and especially to thank you. Now, if you are not watching this live, if you've come back to see this, watch all of the videos, not just this last one, because you will see how to do all of this. We hope to see you again soon on another Jumpstart here at the Microsoft Virtual Academy. Thanks for joining us for the Core Exchange 2013. Have a great time.